not the EFL. It's the Football League podcast that for once is looking ahead, not back. Coming up, can the Foxes get back on the horse or will they feel the Hornets sting? The Tractor Boys look to plough the Hawthorns. Surely Rooney can beat Sheffield Wednesday. We'll talk Trotters, Grecians, O's and Latics in League One and Wheelbarrow roll over Colchester. Powered by Quinbet. This is What the EFL. And here we are later than usual. We thought we'd do a preview show this week, given there wasn't much football for us to reflect on last weekend. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. I'm joined by my two regulars. How are you doing, Adrian Clark?
Yeah, really good. It's good to be back, isn't it? Feels like ages since we were all back together as a trio. So yeah, looking forward to it. Yeah, hopefully Sam had a nice break.
Yeah, Sam Parkin's back, so the triumvirate is in full effect. Sam, are you ready to go again as we reach the business end? I mean, it's not the business end, is it? I was just looking for cliches, but it's an important period of the season.
Fully refreshed. Someone asked me the other day if I had a suntan. I went to the south of France in November for 4 days, so probably would have been negative anyway, but it did rain for 3 out of 4 days as well. So I was bowling around with my hood up on my little anorak, just trying to find some cover. But
any bull? Yeah. Get any bull in while you were there?
No bull. Went to a
steak free though.
Well, had a steak free, had a glass of red, had a few outdoor marchés, which was nice in the rain. So yeah, pleasant time.
Well, that sounds Trabian, as does this. The offer from our sponsors, Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. It is 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, so Sam used his international break to go away. I'm wondering, Sam, if we should just scrap the EFL calendar during times when there are international fixtures. What do we have? 2 games in League One last weekend. We spoke to Johnny Jackson, didn't we, about how he had occasions where he could have done with Wimbledon games being called off because they had players going away, but not quite enough. Are we at the point where we just say no Football League action whatsoever on an international weekend?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because I think there's pros and cons. I'm a little bit on the fence. I think, yeah, Jacko's point was a pertinent one because he was going to be missing, or he has missed, his best goal scorer in Al Hamadi at times this season. So that can have a real, you know, impact, a negative impact on teams in League One and Two if we're talking about their top players, maybe goalkeeper as well. I think Exeter have missed their goalkeeper at times this season, which has been really problematic for them because of players being out on loan, etc. With my players hat on, yeah, I think I would have liked a little break to have a refresh. It's a very demanding season. League One and League Two, invariably, you don't get the opportunity to switch off at all. Maybe if your opponent is still in the FA Cup, I remember that happening a few times, and you get a free weekend. I think the managers would enjoy it to reset. I think that was certainly Johnny's take on it. And I think also to maybe stop entirely, it would be more impactful for the non-league teams to enjoy their weekend in the spotlight. I know we have a non-league day, but I think just having that kind of sprinkling of League One and League Two games last week, is not as impactful as maybe it could be. You know, if you had a full programme of League One and League Two, people could get behind it. Premier League, Championship fans could go to games. But I think just having that sprinkling is just a little bit problematic, probably would be my take. Fixture congestion, I know it probably levels itself out, but I think we've come to a stage now where maybe a decision rightly should be made to just give everyone a little bit of a break.
I guess, Clarkie, people would look at attendances and say, well, we got nearly 12,000 at Notts County Bradford in League Two last weekend. And you know, that's why we should keep going, because it gives supporters of other clubs the chance to go and watch other teams. But that's a bit of a red herring, isn't it? Because that fixture would have had a big crowd anyway.
Yeah, do they really? Do fans of Premier League teams then go and watch their nearest EFL club? Not that many, in my opinion. I used to like the idea of the kids for a quid day and things like that, special offers during these little breaks to try and incentivize people to come in. A little bit like that non-league day, you could have an EFL day or, you know, whatnot. I don't know how you could label it. But if managers in League One and League Two are being robbed of their players, you know, good players, key men for these. It skews the league, doesn't it? It's really, really unfair that you know, if you've got an Iraqi international, as Johnny Jackson has at AFC Wimbledon, that's your main man up top, and you just have to swallow it. It feels harsh. So I think actually that the way things are going with so many widespread postponements, just call it all off. And look, we talk about player fatigue at the highest level and wanting to protect players from injuries, etc. Do EFL players not count in that? You know, are they less important? Well, they're not less important to their clubs, their employers. And, you know, it's pretty important to them that they protect their bodies as well and have the odd little bit of rest and recuperation. So, yeah, I think the way that it's going, let's just bin it. Have a little pause. I think it would improve the quality of the football as well.
Again, I know there'd be pros and cons, but just extend the season by a week. Or 10 days. I don't know, because I haven't got the dates in front of me. It felt like an eternity between the end of the season and the start of this season, and the end of the playoffs and the start of this season. So gone are the days where players go and have 6 weeks off now. I think the players can accept that, and it would maybe be up to the clubs to be a little bit more flexible and not get them back so early, give them the programs to go away. You know, the world now, you can check in and upload your physical data if they're doing stuff away from the training ground, so that there's not loads of fixtures and it doesn't get really clogged up towards the tail end of the campaign. Just extend it a little bit and then it won't be as problematic. I think there's ways around it. And I think during the season, again, God, that'd have been music to my ears. I loved it when I was up in Scotland, because, you know, the games got called off in the Premier League, and I think maybe the First Division as well. Certainly when I was playing in the Premier League for, you know, slightly unfashionable clubs, lovely. 10 days, get yourself back to London.
All right. Well, it's not something that we're going to have to worry about for a while. The next international break isn't until March. So it's ahead for the rest of the season. We're going to have a look at some big championship games next. Right then, after back-to-back 1-0 defeats, Leicester might have been glad for the chance to stop and reflect. Enzo Maresca's side top on goal difference alone after they lost to Leeds and Middlesbrough. They welcome Watford to the King Power Stadium. Valerian Ismail will be celebrating his 15th game in charge of the visitors. That's more than Chris Wilder, Rob Edwards and Claudio Ranieri, who've all had the gig since January last year, have managed.
Yeah. Can we start to label him long-serving?
He's not far off it, yeah. Is he? I mean, we're getting to the point where we're making jokes about him being in the job, which I guess is something. Sam, they'll fancy their chances, will they? Watford here, in Leicester's defeats, they've lost twice already at home, haven't they, to Hull and to Leeds. What I noted looking up this game, which really surprised me, is that they've only scored 11 goals at the King Power this stadium. That's fewer than the rest of the top seven. It's nine less than Plymouth, who are 19th, and it's less than Rotherham, who are in the relegation zone. What's going on there?
Yeah, I noted that as well. Yeah, they haven't scored, obviously, in the last two, and I think it's just three goals in four. And yeah, a bit concerning about the lack of goals coming from the strikers, maybe. We know they're, you know, incredibly well stocked there. I think it's just two in the last five, one apiece for Vardy and Iheanacho. And I thought it was worth raising the point that Tom Cannon, I think, is nearing a return. So in terms of a natural goal scorer, you know, he's right up there, isn't he? What he's produced in the Championship previously with Preston, and the type of profile he is in comparison to those two that I just mentioned, who are both brilliant players. And see, Vardy is an absolute hero, and rightly so. But that's going to be interesting to keep an eye on. Harry Winks is out for this one, I believe, suspended. So goes far to say that he has far and away been their most important player, cog in the machine, in the Maresca style. So what they do there is going to be interesting. I've seen Choudhury and kind of Pereira play that role, and it'll probably be one of those with the other at fullback and coming in to make up that kind of double pivot. So yeah, not necessarily the worst time to play Leicester, but I think Watford will be fearful that they'll be a bit of a wounded animal and they may respond in this game. And yeah, this is very different to what we've seen from Valerian Ismail before, but they come into this game really in great form. Probably similarities to that successful promotion campaign they had a few years ago, in terms that the success seems to be built from the back at the moment. I think four clean sheets in five, equal most clean sheets in the division with West Brom. And all of a sudden, look to have a nice balance in midfield. I think me and Clarkey both spoke about that being their Achilles heel, the balance, lacking a bit of muscle in there. think with Livermore, Kayembe, another Kone, I think it was the other day, they seem to have that now. And Rajovic up front doesn't do much outside of the box. He had 13 touches in that 5-0 win over Rotherham the other day and played about, I think, 84, 85 minutes, 2 goals. So I looked a little bit deeper, 13 shots across the piece this season, 7 on target, 6 goals. Shows you that he is in the mood, getting opportunities and sticking them away. So I would anticipate this will be a counter-attacking setup plan from Valor and Ishmael. But yeah, we've seen what Hull go to Leicester, Leeds carry out brilliant game plans. I wouldn't say it's impossible, but still back the Foxes to get back on the march.
Yes, weird, isn't it? They've not scored more goals at the King Power Stadium. I think it's just everyone goes there with such a defensive mindset, don't they? It's a real grind sometimes, and that clearly doesn't suit a Jamie Vardy and puts a lot of pressure on the wingers to deliver. And I still think that the wingers, as exciting as they are a little bit inconsistent with their end products. So, you know, that's an area to improve. I'm sure we've worked on it during the break. I'm looking forward to seeing Mateus Martins for Watford in this game. I think he's been really, really good for them. He's only 20. You know, he scored a few goals. He's plays on that left wing. Quite an exciting player. I think he's probably the one. Obviously, he's on loan at the moment for Udinese, but he could be a possible match winner for them. I think he's been pretty impressive. And of course, Leicester will bring in their right back at times. We know that, whether it's Ricardo or McAteer or Chowdhury, they'll bring them into midfield. So on those transitions, boom, give it to Martins out on that left wing. And I think he can potentially hurt them. So yeah, being interesting to see how he fares. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a high scoring game. I think Watford will set their stall out to be hard to break down, which they are. And it's going to be a test for Leicester.
Just so disappointing, isn't it, that Harry Winks, I mean, I know he's not playing in this game, but why didn't they just give him the squad number 40 when he joined? You'd sell 100 more Harry Winks shirts per day if you did that. It's just basic marketing, guys. Anyway, we should move on.
He should have chose it.
Take ownership of it. Everybody, you know, as lame as me, makes a joke every time they see him. Just take ownership of it. Anyway, Ipswich, they're ready to pounce if Leicester slip up again. Tractor Boys heading to the West Midlands to take on West Brom. 8 points clear of third place Leeds they are. Our only goal difference keeping the baggies outside the playoff places. This is an interesting one, Adrian, isn't it? Because Albion coming into it in decent form, beaten by Saints before the break, but they had won 3 on the spin before that. So it's not going to be an easy one for Ipswich. And for what we said about Leicester and their lack of goals, that's not a problem for Ipswich Town, is it? They've scored in every league game and at least twice in 6 of their last 7. So if we might not get many goals at the KP, maybe we will at the Hawthorns.
I think so, yeah. I think this could be an absolute cracker. I mean, the only issue is Carlos Corbrán. Carlos Corbrán, for me, is probably pound for pound the best tactician in the Championship. I think that he comes up with some very, very smart game plans. And I think with a pretty thin squad that's been decimated by a lot of injuries to key players, he's doing great. He really is. And I just think he will have had a long time to sort of plot this one against Kieran McKenna. And you do wonder whether it'll be more about negating Ipswich's strengths than going out there and scoring goals themselves. We'll have to wait and see. I do think Ipswich have vulnerability. I mean, they've conceded 2 goals in 5 of their last 6 games, Ipswich. They haven't lost any of them, which is just madness, really, isn't it? So what was the game? The game before the international break, you know, their centre-halves aren't quick, really. There's a little bit of sluggishness there. And I do feel that maybe a Thomas Asante could cause them a few problems with his speed inside the final third. So, yeah, it's going to be a really interesting game. Ipswich, just great going forward, aren't they? Just so many options. It's always a 4-2-3-1, but he can just drop different players in and they all seem to be doing the business for him. 14 different goal scorers Ipswich Town have had in 16 matches in the Championship. I mean, that's what a result that is for Kieran McKenna. He's got whoever he uses that, you know, that they're more than capable of making the difference. So, yeah, they'll go there with confidence. Still, of course, only lost once at home to Leeds, that 4-3 game. Haven't been beaten away. Been a bit more sensible, haven't they, away from home Ipswich this season than they have at Portman Road. So, as for the Baggies, I mean, as I said, I think they're going very, very well. Don't create that much. I was looking at some of the numbers. 14 teams in the Championship create more chances than West Brom. but they score plenty of goals. They're quite clinical. And as always, they're very good at set pieces. A lot of defenders chip in with goals, don't they, for West Bromwich Albion. So who can defend, by the way? I think they are quite a solid side. So yeah, look, it's going to be a test for West Brom to see where they're at. And I think this run of games, they've got some really tricky games coming up. But it would also tell us a bit more about Ipswich. This is their hardest game for a while. And yeah, it'll be fascinating to see how they fare at the Hawthorns. If they can go there and win, what a boost that will give their automatic promotion hopes. It'll give them so much belief.
First time they met since 2019. It was a 1-1 draw at the Hawthorns that day. Not too far away from there, the Downer Derby at St Andrews. Birmingham City hosting Rock Bottom Sheffield Wednesday. Blues have lost 4 of 5. They're yet to win under Wayne Rooney. Wednesday have taken a pitiful 6 points from their 16 games thus far. Try and get me hyped up for this one then, Sam. Is it a must win for both?
That's kind of what I was thinking when I saw the fixture, but I think I'm going to just have to soften my sentiment a little bit.
We're not in must-win territory for Wazzy yet, are
no,
we?
No, we're not. I think some of the fans would probably say that. Yeah. I think they, you know, sometimes I say, oh, the performance is more important than the result, and I've probably been guilty of saying that this season at times. I think they need both, kind of, at the moment, especially given the opponent. And it starts a nice run of games. I think they play Leicester around Christmas, but it's Blackburn, Rotherham, Coventry, Cardiff next after Sheffield Wednesday at home, obviously at the weekend. So it's not the worst run of games. They regressed a little bit in that defeat at Sunderland against the patched up Sunderland as well. All the good work that we saw in the previous game against Ipswich, where they played really well for 45 minutes an hour, certainly wasn't evident. Gave away some terrible goals at Sunderland, you know, balls into the box, centre-halves all at sea. So, yeah, I think Wayne Rooney's probably really relieved to have the 2 weeks to work on the training ground to come up with a game plan to try and get some of his methods into these players. But I think it's difficult because he's obviously, you know, gone quite expansive early on and almost reversed a little bit in the last week or two. Obviously admitting that maybe the players, it was too much too soon or slightly incapable of carrying out some of the stuff that he wanted. So we'll see how they set up for this one. I think Sheffield Wednesday have improved, bizarrely, under Danny Rowe. I think the fans seem to be on board. I think they're playing with a bit more of a purpose.
Hang on, they've failed to score in four of their five games under him.
All right, trying to be controversial.
I'm not.
I'm telling you. They've been better. They beat Rotherham, didn't they, at home? I know it's Rotherham who have since lost their manager. Goal scoring is the problem. I think in terms of the setup and the intensity in the performances, I think it's been better. And I think the fans would say that. And I think they, from the outside, it looks like they're behind him. I think he's short in terms of some positions, I think, where they need to add to carry out the type of play that he wants to play. I think they badly lack a striker that can run beyond. I think they've got a number of strikers who are pretty much doing the same job. I think the wing-backs can improve. I think the goalkeeper's an issue at the moment. I think Dawson's come back in and not been particularly good. So there are problems within, but I think having changed the manager and made this appointment, it feels to me that the supporters are giving them the benefit of the doubt. But you're right. I mean, the goals, and I hope I've done this right, 9 hours they've not scored for away from Hillsborough. 540 minutes. So it's quite an easy sum for me to do, actually. 540 minutes. 26th of August was the last away goal. And they pretty much mirror Rotherham in terms of the worst team on the road in the division. Just 1 point from 7 matches. So it's clear where the issues are. And until they can get probably a little bit of business done, don't really see it improving majorly. He's put his trust in Gassama and another young winger, hasn't he? Musaba. So, yeah, he's put his trust in them. I think the balance of the team, maybe with Bannon playing in a two, always kind of raises alarm bells with me. I think you need to probably get a third midfielder in there. Otherwise, they're a little bit weak in that area. So I think there are problems, and he probably got the selection wrong against Millwall. But yeah, everything I've read, everything I've seen, I'm backing this manager. I quite like him. Clarkey.
Fair play. He's brought in Chris Powell. We like Chris Powell. He's a nice guy and he's obviously a good coach. Sal Bibo, actually, new goalie coach. Used to be at Arsenal. I've interviewed him before. He's a good friendly guy. So, yeah, we wish him luck. How much would you pay for a ticket, Matt, for Birmingham City versus Sheffield Wednesday? Just out of interest. Yeah. What do you think it would be worth? You know, what do you think? Would you be happy to pay to go and watch that?
This is always one of those, isn't it, where if I make an actual guess and it's quite close to what the thing is, that's not as good. So what I would be prepared to pay, see Birmingham, I mean, at St Andrews as well, which is falling down, against Sheffield Wednesday, £15.
Yeah, it's £37.50. there's a bit of chatter I noticed around Birmingham at the moment with high ticket prices. Just, I think Coventry asked them to pay £40 recently, and I think they're £40 tickets for the Leicester game that Sam referenced. I've got a freebie to that, by the way, so happy days. Looking forward to that. I just think Championship football shouldn't cost that much. It just shouldn't. I think that maybe clubs are chasing the extra revenue to make sure that they can stay within FFP rules and whatnot, but just feels wrong to me. You shouldn't be having to pay over £30 to watch a Championship match. It's not.
No, and if you are thinking about doing that and you're a Birmingham fan, before you part with your £37.50, I'll point out that none of the last five meetings between these sides has ended in a home win. So more pain for Wayne if that historical precedent continues. Lastly, in the Championship, if you like kits with stripes on, have I got the game for you? It's Huddersfield versus Southampton in Yorkshire. The contrast between the clubs is stark. Saints are fourth. They've won six of their last eight. Town are only just above the relegation zone. They've lost three of their last four. It's the battle of the two managers that neither Sam nor Adrian rate particularly highly. Clark, you absolutely scolded me a few months ago when I suggested that Southampton were doing all right. It's on the other foot now, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I did. I was quite harsh on Russell Martin, but he has turned it around. Definitely. And I did say I want it to work because I love that brand. You know, I like the brand of football. I think he seems like a really good guy. I like his style, but you know, they were playing kamikaze football, weren't they? It was, you know, you score, we score, but they've sorted it out and they've, you know, they're still conceding goals, but everything's a bit more measured. Everything's a bit more settled. Got a nice settled starting 11 at Southampton now. You kind of know the team roughly before the match. And I think all of that has definitely helped. So no, they're heading in the right direction for sure. Interesting to see if Ross Stewart plays. What an option that is, by the way, for Southampton. It's kind of the forgotten transfer, a little bit like Tom Cannon at Leicester City. Ross Stewart coming in from Sunderland. I think he came off the bench in the game before the international break.
He'll be like a new signing. He'll be like a new signing.
He's the classic like a new signing, isn't he, Ross Stewart? And thinking about it, you know, Stewart and Adam Armstrong up top. I mean, Sam, that's got a nice little ring to it, hasn't it? I think, you know, Armstrong, both pretty hardworking, both pretty mobile, intelligent players. That's tasty, right?
Yeah, I suppose what immediately springs to mind is, like, for this game in particular as well, there's going to be zero space, though, is there? I mean, Huddersfield aren't going to come out at all. And I think he's a bit of a throwback in terms of his physical. Well, he's not a throwback. He's physical, but he can run as well. So you want space for him to be able to exploit. I mean, this could be the highest percentage of possession ever recorded in Championship history, could it not, Clarkey?
Yeah.
I mean, well, hopefully for Huddersfield's sake, they'll have a few players back because they have been like down to the bare bones. But this is going to be keep ball, isn't it?
It will be keep ball. It will be a training session. Darren Moore, I don't know. I know that he's been decimated with injuries and I know that he doesn't really have very many strikers available. I just think when you're a bit light up front, sometimes the best way is to go with two players up front and to be a little bit more proactive rather than basically put everyone behind the ball and have the one sort of fringe player centre forward up front on their own doing a thankless task, because it just gives you zero belief that you're going to score a goal. And that's kind of where they've been. They were outshot, weren't they, by 20-2 by Hull City. Sam pointed that out to me at the time. Unbelievable. 5-4-1, had 24% of the ball. At home to Watford, they had five shots in that game. Had 28% of the ball. That was 0-0. They were outshot at Leeds, 5-20. Lost that one 4-0. So the way he set up in all of those games was 5-4-1 with the one very much isolated. So that hasn't worked. And I just think, what are the Huddersfield board thinking at the moment? Are they thinking, yeah, we got our man, we got our progressive coach that's going to bring that different brand of football, that he's going to take us to the next level? Are they thinking that? Or would Neil Warnock have potentially got a little bit more out of the players in that run of games? For me, Warnock would have done more. I don't want to batter Darren Moore too much, but yeah, it's probably hard, isn't it,
for the fans that go week in, week out. You know, those games that you just reeled off, Clarkey, the Leeds one you can understand.
Mm.
But like when you're thinking Watford at home,
yeah,
an opportunity to go and take the game to the opponent, and Hull as well, to a degree. I know they're a really good side and improving fast, but when you look at those games, you think, yeah, we can understand the game plan may have to be regimented defensive against Leeds at Elland Road, but the other games, come on, you're surely better off having a bit of a go. And yeah, I remember being at QPR last season against Huddersfield under Mark Fotheringham, but similar circumstances, down to the bare bones, really struggling at the time. He was desperate for a win and they won at QPR, the good QPR, by the way. I think this was still Mick Beale QPR, I think, but they had a go. And actually they caused, and it's pretty much the same, you know, Ward and Radoni, Kasumi, the lads that saw Sorba Thomas, the lads that have been there, you know, during that period. So I just think sometimes, yeah, being on the front foot, is you're better off doing that.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think the reason that he has gone ultra defensive is that he went on the front foot against Cardiff. Do you remember it? I think they played 3-5-2 in that game. They had more of the ball than Cardiff. They had more shots than Cardiff. Had 19 shots in that game and they lost 4-0. And I remember, I think we talked about the game and said it's a harsh scoreline. And it was a harsh scoreline. But rather than just treating that as that's a harsh scoreline, he's gone the complete opposite way and they've just offered zilch. Just nothing. And that's not fun to watch. It's not fun to play in. And it's not going to build any kind of confidence, in my opinion. So that said, going for it against Southampton this weekend, it could be an issue. But that might be the best way, because it's not as if Southampton are that sturdy at the back. I still think they'd have more chance of getting a positive result by being bolder against Southampton than by just parking the bus and having 9% possession.
We're going to go into League One next. Oh, look, a long road trip. You know I love these. Exeter go to Bolton on Saturday. That's more than 500 miles, nearly 9 hours of driving for those heading up from the south. Yes, Adrian?
No, I was going to ask Sam briefly, just before we get into the game, on a long road trip on the bus, what was his go-to? What was his thing? Was he a book reader? Was he a card school player? Was he a headphones? Was he just pure bant? Just curious.
Relevant this week, isn't it? Given that it's Exeter we're about to talk about. So it was what I did for my final 10 months or whatever of my career. That was an 8 o'clock leave on a Friday morning, that would be, for Exeter. This is Paul Tisdale, obviously, was the manager. 8 o'clock from the training ground, obviously up the M5, stop off to train somewhere, normally in the Midlands, and then off to very nice digs in the evening. So I think quite a lot of the budget went on nice hotels during my year, handily, which was really nice. But that was, yeah, even for me, who'd done 15 years or so by then, a bit of an eye-opener. You know, 8 o'clock on the bus. They were long old trips from Exeter. I probably evolved over time, Clarkey. I was, yeah, man, a simple taste, probably the early, just the 442, Heat magazine, all the tabloids. Do you know what I mean? I was pretty...
Nuts, too.
Yeah, the whole range. No card school for me, no computers, and then probably evolved to broadsheet. Got a bit older.
Boring bastard.
Possibly a book of some description. Still a 442. And then, yeah, maybe a nice film on the laptop in the latter days. I used to like sitting with Steve Perryman, actually, on the bus when I was at Exeter. So Dave Wheeler, obviously, would be out of that.
Would you got a bit of a brown nose shout there for going to sit next to Perryman?
I was too old for anyone to care by that stage. And I was giving away like 15 years. No, it's fine. Get furthest away from us, the better. I used to quiz Steve quite a lot, actually, on the way on those Friday trips. But yeah.
No, decent. Yeah, I was a card player, but never with the hardcore players that played for proper money. I want my game. Used to play nomination trumps. Just lasted about an hour and a half the game, and the most you'd lose is a fiver. So that was for me. That was good.
I used to think the Games of Hearts, I remember that being the game that everyone played. I never learned how to play, but I just remember thinking it was a fine line between camaraderie, team spirit, bonding, and people that literally didn't talk to each other when we got to the other end and didn't pass the ball to each other in training because they had some beef.
500 down. Yeah. I've been on coach trips where, you know, the players are owing their teammates for £500 or £600. Horrendous. Shouldn't be allowed.
Imagine what it's going to be like in 2023. Let's bring it back to there. Sam, can you make a case for your old club here, or is it going to be tough sheet for Coldwell and co? I know they beat your other old club in the trophy in midweek, so that's something, I guess.
Yeah, I saw that on the, when you just typed the game in, I had a little look at the score and to look at the lineups. There was about five or six of the Swindon players who I'd heard, but I don't think they played before. So this was a very, very youthful Swindon in the Football League trophy. But yeah, Exeter badly needed it. 9 defeats in 10 in all competitions. So 9 defeats in 11 going into this one. And only lost one of their first 6 in the league. So this has crept up on me a little bit. This is a desperate, desperate time for Exeter City fans at the moment, considering the run they're on. They badly need something. Of course, there's a lot of conversation about the future of Gary Caldwell. They're the worst team over the last 8. That's pretty obvious. Bolton Wanderers, ominously, are the best team over the last 8 in League One. 7 straight wins for Bolton in all competitions. So this is as tough as it gets. And I just thought it was worth speaking about Bolton today because, you know, I wasn't with you last week, but it feels like this has crept up on me a little bit. It's a familiar shape and style under Ian Evatt, third most average possession in the league, and no surprise, Dion Charles is their main man again. Scored for Northern Ireland in the week. Him and Adebayo, who was a featured scouting report last season, those two seem to have struck up a good combination. I think 14 goals combined. Adebayo's on a little bit of a goal drought at the moment, but I thought that was quite problematic finding the right partner for Dion Charles. So they seem to have done that there, and yeah, they're on a magnificent run at the moment. So this is, yeah, incredibly tough proposition for Exeter. The 4 clean sheets they've had this season, 10 points. So if they can do that, miraculously, they've got a chance of getting a points return. But yeah, this should be a home win and a comfortable one. And it's probably whether the hierarchy at Exeter, we know that it's run slightly differently from most of the other clubs in the EFL, if they're going to change the manager, because they don't do it invariably, do they? And it's probably a real want for this to work. It did initially. At the moment, they look pretty short of quality all over. It's difficult to pinpoint exactly which area they're struggling, and clearly the manager needs to do better as well.
Yeah, it'd be a tough break for him if he does 3 days on a coach to get to from a game and then gets back and gets his walking papers as soon as he lands. Right, Leighton Orient taking on Wigan Athletic. O's 14th in the standings, Wigan 18th. Orient beaten at home by Lincoln on Tuesday. That was the game that was rearranged following the abandonment of the original fixed draft. At least supporter passed away during that game. We should mention briefly, Clarkey, that Michael Scubala is the Lincoln manager now. Now, I feel like I can tell you more about him than you can tell about me, because I actually saw his last game as Leeds under 21 coach. It was against Chelsea a couple of weeks ago. What I'd forgotten was that he managed Leeds in the Premier League last season, didn't he? Including at Old Trafford for a couple of games. So he's not a total rookie, but he kind of fits the Lincoln mould of up-and-coming coach, like what they try to do with Mark Kennedy.
Yeah. Look, they're a really well-run club. They don't make many mistakes, Lincoln City, with managers. Still shrouded in a bit of mystery what happened with Mark Kennedy there, but we move on from that. And Scubala, after a long process, I'm led to believe, was their preferred choice. What an interesting character. I mean, he's a PE teacher not that long ago, round the corner from where I live, in Lutterworth in Leicestershire. He was a PE teacher. He looked after a Loughborough University team, and he was in charge of the futsal team, I think, for the FA as well. The England team, great game, futsal. A little bit complicated, but a fun game to play, and really good for young players, I think, to get involved in futsal. And then he sort of was a bit of a favourite with the FA, did some work with the under-18s, and then got his chance at Leeds. Look at what Leeds have done in recent years in terms of young players getting into the first team, and he's been a part of that. So, yeah, he comes with a really good reputation And we wish him well. Obviously, he got his first win at Leyton Orient in midweek. Wasn't vintage, I don't think. I think they relied quite a lot on the goalkeeper, Lucas Jensen, who's having a really good season for Lincoln City. He was excellent. He just continued the 3-4-3 that Mark Kennedy went with, that Tom Shaw, the interim guy, continued with. So nothing's changed too dramatically. Obviously, 1-0 defeat at Stevenage, a 1-0 win at Leyton Orient tells you that it's been pretty solid. It's been about the shape. And that kind of is their strength, Lincoln. I was looking at it. They've let in 3 more goals from set pieces than they have in open play. It's mad. They've let in 9 from corners and free kicks. Only 6. What are we? It's nearly Christmas. Well, kind of. It's nearly December. And they've only let in 6 goals in open play, which I think is very, very impressive. So, it'll be interesting to see how they go against Barnsley. This time around, obviously, his first home match at Sintel Bank. Barnsley were unbeaten away from home until the game at Derby just before the break, and they got walloped 3-0, which is a bit of a surprise. So we'll see. But the thing in Lincoln's favour is that Barnsley have been really bad against the best teams in the division. Teams in the top half, right? They've only had 6 games against them. They've lost 5 and drawn 1. And they've conceded 3 goals in 4 of those 6 games against top half sides. So Barnsley, if they're going to be a promotion team, need to sharpen up against their immediate rivals. And surprisingly, Lincoln are rivals because they're just 1 point off of the playoffs as it stands. So it'll be an interesting game.
Yeah, just on Lincoln, considering it took a while to make this appointment and obviously the profile of the guy that's come in, I think this is probably a decision built on a bit of a change of philosophy. If you think of certainly Mark Kennedy, his team was really well set up without the ball. And then previously, I think Michael Appleton tried to play quite a lot of possession football. I think this is probably a move to what a lot of the teams desire, I suppose, quite high intensity. I think he's made some sounds that his preferred formation is the 4-2-3-1. I just think this is going to be high energy. Yeah, they want the ball, but get it forward with a purpose, close from the front. So I think this is, a slightly different appointment for Lincoln, probably to just infuse the supporters after maybe slightly drab setup previously and obviously an appointment in Michael Appleton that didn't work. So different from the Cowleys, but probably just to infuse the supporters.
Yeah, he's going to like young players for sure. That's the model anyway, isn't it? Use young players, develop them, we'll sell them. Interestingly, in midweek at Leyton Orient, he had 2 kids on the bench that played the night before in the FA Youth Cup, which I think is an early signal of intent, isn't it? Because he's just saying, I will reward young players if they shine. And he's laid down a marker there.
Well, that person who left us a review on Apple Podcasts saying there wasn't enough, Lincoln will be pleased. But Leyton Orient and Wigan supporters might be feeling a little short-changed at that preview of their game.
He won't... He won't comment again if he knows my old man's from Lincoln and used to go to Sintel Bank in the 60s every week. I mean, that's it. That's it done now, isn't it?
Yeah, did it?
Every time I used to miss the target when I was a kid playing football, my old man used to shout Grimsby. I mean, it doesn't get more 1960s than that, does it?
Did he have a siren at home?
I don't think he's au fait with a siren. He lives in the south of France, obviously, now. So his days probably would have, I'm sure he wouldn't have approved of the siren raining in the set pieces under the Cowleys. That wouldn't have been for my old man. Total football.
I'm reining this in. Adrian, I've got a question for you. It's about Leyton Orient against Wigan. Did you know that this weekend is going to be the first time that they've played each other? This is from my friends at Soccer Base. Since 1997, it was a 5-1 win at Springfield Park for Wigan. I want you to tell me which current Premier League assistant first team manager got a hat trick in that game for Wigan against Leyton Orient in 1997.
I've got it already.
Assistant head
coach. Have you got it already?
I think so. Okay. I might need some of the details reiterated, but I think I've got it.
Okay. Just trying to think of the Wigan team of 1997. Yeah, I nearly joined that team. I had talks with the Latics, but they were a bit stingy. Didn't cough up enough dough to convince me to move north.
Spent it all on Roberto Martinez.
Yeah, exactly. I'll pass the baton over to Sam. He can have the glory. I've not got a scooter.
So you're looking for a Wigan striker, late 90s, scored a hat trick. He's a assistant head coach in the Premier League.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he was a striker, but all the other things you said are correct.
And I believe he's worked with Roberto Martinez in the last few years as a coach. I'm going Graham Jones. I'll build it up. Is it wrong?
It's totally right. Well done. Scored on 6, 48 and 52. Graham Lancashire also found the net, which is a great name for somebody who plays for Wigan. Briefly then, Clark, I want to ask you something about Leighton Orient, because I feel like they've been overshadowed a little bit by Stevenage in terms of the promoted teams. I know they lost on Tuesday, but they're doing all right, aren't they? First season back at this level. They've recovered from that poor start they had, at least.
Definitely. No, I think there are reasons to feel encouraged. I think that they play a nice brand of football. They're just probably a striker short of, or like a real guaranteed striker short of being a much more competitive team in the top half of League One. Defensively, pretty sound. You know, they don't give that much away. I was speaking to a Leighton Orient fan earlier this week, actually, and they were happy with it. They were happy with how it's going. I don't think there's any reason to be alarmed that they're not in the top half at the moment. By the end of this season, I would imagine they'll be at least in the middle of the table and absolutely fine, ready to kick on.
Yeah, and Wigan will probably be the same. They'd be even higher if they didn't have that 8-point deduction at the start of the campaign. Okay, there's a couple of League Two games that have caught our eye. We'll talk about those next. So Matthew Etherington has been appointed Colchester boss since we last spoke. He was interim, then he wasn't, because Crawley claimed he was still under contract, but now it's all fine, apparently. He'll pit his wits against the Wild Ones of Barrow this weekend. Masterminded a trophy win against his old club Posh on Tuesday, Sam. I've got this pegged as quite a nice gig for Etherington, because they're 6 points from relegation. You'd say there's at least two teams who are worse than them in League Two this season. So this is a nice chance for him to get well established for the rest of the season without any real jeopardy, perhaps, or am I being a bit too optimistic?
So I feel like there's ambition at Colchester, maybe more so than there has been over the last 5 years, maybe even longer, in terms of the type of squad that's been put together. I think that Ben Garner was backed. I think that's obviously what was problematic for him when the results turned and turned quickly. I think this is probably the most a manager's been back there in a while. So I think there's a bit of pressure, and I think there's a desire from the supporters to strive for better than just survival in League Two. So I think there's a bit of pressure on him. I saw them obviously against Swindon the other day. I was quite impressed. Actually, you know, Swindon are the more possession heavy, probably play the prettier stuff. But that wasn't to say that Colchester couldn't handle the ball. They've got some nice midfield players. Arthur Reid can play. We know Cameron McGeehan can play. They got two strikers who prefer the ball in the channels or wide. Sorry, in the channels or in behind. Tavide's a 19-year-old homegrown product, I think, who scored a few goals. And he played alongside Joe Taylor, who I scouted earlier on in the season on loan from Luton. Those two are kind of on the shoulder type players of the centre-halves. So they did look for those two early. Bit of drive from Mingy, who's a midfield player. They got from Pompey. He's got a bit of power and poise in the midfield. So they looked a pretty good unit. I don't think this is too dissimilar to the way that Ben Garner was setting up. Therefore, I'd love to be able to tell you exactly what Matty Everton's done, but it's not immediately obvious to me. They've just got some decent players now for the level. We're probably underachieving under Ben Garner. Maybe he's, you know, released the shackles a little bit. We don't know what he's doing on the training ground, etc. But yeah, they look like a pretty good outfit. I've not even mentioned Noel Chilvers, who's probably on their day their best player. I think he's back and back in form now, having missed a bit of football early part of the season, probably because he wasn't quite at it. So yeah, I think they're probably going to be okay this year. Don't think they're going to have to worry about relegation, but you know, 10 points from his first 15 is a really good way to start for Matt Everington, and yeah, come up against a increasingly good Barrow side. I think Clarkey's done this before. I think this is the joint best defence with Mansfield now in terms of goals per game that they're conceding. But I looked a little bit deeper, so 18 games. Yeah, 15 games, they conceded none or one. So only in three games have they conceded multiple goals. I mean, that is incredible going. Incredible going.
Yeah.
So they are, I mean, you look at the attacking numbers, you know, they're well down. So they're not creating much. They've scored 21. I think only Gillingham and Harrogate, 17th and above, have scored fewer. So they're very much built on a strong defence, the togetherness. I think that's really evident. They're not afraid to go back to front, but they've got the makings of a really good front pairing, Telford and Aqua, who I think back in our previous guys, during our previous guys, I spoke about this lad. I haven't seen him at Southend, and I've spoken to people that have been at Southend and they thought he was a little bit short in a few areas. I've always quite liked him. He's you know, big physically, back to goal type of player. He's got some really good attributes. I thought actually his understanding of the role when I saw him as a young lad was really good. And I think that's in evidence now, what he's doing at Barrow. Maybe he doesn't get quite enough goals, but him and Dom Telford, that's a really good partnership, I think, for the level. So Pete Wild, again, after that stellar start to last season, basically repeated it at the start of this campaign. They're going wonderfully well. Can they maintain it this year? That's the big question. But yeah, and to go back to a feature I wanted to start a few weeks ago, Pete Wild in my top three for the fist pumps in the division because left-handed. Have you seen it, Clarky?
Okay.
Left-handed.
Does it look weird?
It looks weird.
Yeah.
Looks unique. It's just good. It's in there with Steve Evans. I'm just need to bring the third one to the party and we've got our three.
Yeah, right. Does it have to be Steve Evans? You can't classify as a good fist pump, can you? Or can you?
Oh, I love it. The bowling ball. I love it.
The bowling ball.
He was doing the pointing the other day as well. He was doing the pointing of the away support. The bowling ball. Tremendous.
Scubala tried it on Tuesday night. He's got work to do, but that's fine.
That.
Very quickly on Barrow, because Sam's covered exactly the same points I was going to. They've only lost three, two of them away to Stockport and Mansfield. What were the scores? 1-0. They're not the worst defeats in the world against the two best teams in the division. If anyone thinks Barrow are going to suddenly drop off and end up in the lower reaches, I think they're mistaken. This is a proper solid team.
Well, last but not least, it's the two teams with grounds that bring to mind fields and countrysides and lanes and all that kind of stuff. It's Notts County heading from Meadow to Plough Lane to take on Wimbledon. It's only the third ever meeting between these teams. We talk a lot about both of these teams, actually, Adrian, and we've spoken about home records a fair bit in this show. Wimbledon got to improve theirs if they're going to make the playoffs, right? They've only won 2 out of 8 on their own patch in the league, but it's not going to be easy to do that against a Notts team who will be relieved that Luke Williams is still in charge of them.
Yeah. I mean, who is he linked with again?
Oxford.
That's it, yeah.
But he says that it was Ruben Rodriguez, his old player, who did the linking and nobody else.
Well, we covered it. If anyone wants to know about Des Buckingham, we covered that on last week's pod. So, yeah, tune in.
Ex-Swindon as well, Luke Williams. Can't do that. Tommy Mooney did it once. It's all over.
Can't do it, can you? No.
Over in SN1.
Wimbledon need a scout. They've not beaten anyone above them in the division yet. I think obviously they had a great FA Cup win, didn't they? 5-1 at home to Cheltenham. That was a real boost for them. And then they beat Donny as well at home before the international break. So I don't think they'll be scared of Notts County, and they shouldn't be. They've actually lost fewer games, AFC Wimbledon, than Notts County this season. They've only lost 4. They're pretty solid outfit. And they don't give a lot away. I think, yeah, I know we're a little bit biased. It's Sam's mate. But I think they are a pretty well-coached team. They're very well-drilled and they don't offer up that many gifts to teams. You have to work hard, I think, to beat AFC Wimbledon at the moment. And yeah, they've got goals in them, obviously, with Al Hamady and James and Tilly, who are bigged up on the scouting report. They will be missing Omar Bugil in this game. He's suspended from that Doncaster win, so they're a little bit short up top, so they have to have a little bit of a rejig. But yeah, no, I think this should be a little bit of a glamour game, and if any team can handle Notts County's front three, it might be Wimbledon because of their strong defensive record. I was looking at that front three, by the way, of Macaulay Langstaff, 13 goals, Dan Crowley, 8 goals, David McGoldrick, 7 goals. That adds up to 28 by my reckoning. Wimbledon have scored 25. So that's what they're up against. That's what every team is up against when they face Notts County. That front three are deadly. They're very talented. and extremely clinical. In fairness to Wimbledon, only six League Two clubs have scored more than Notts County's front three. It's, you know, that shows the quality. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting. A solid Wimbledon team up against this possession based Notts County that have got so much class in forward areas. Who's going to come out on top? I think Wimbledon can be competitive in this game. It wouldn't surprise me if they produced a shock.
I've just had a quick look at Notts' league games, and from what I can make out, the draw at MK Dons back in September is the only league game where one of those three hasn't scored a goal this season. So that is pretty exceptional stuff from them on their first season back in the Football League. Okay, that's just about going to do us for today. But even though we're doing a preview show, I've still got a tweet for the chaps to react to. I trawled through club Twitter feeds to see if there was any retweeting of players' tributes post-match after Football League trophy games. It won't surprise you to know that they're a little bit quiet as regards that. So I've picked one instead from MK Don's official accounts. They beat Northampton 3-2, and they have termed it, with a picture of some of their players smiling and cheering after they've scored a goal, a special night at Stadium MK, 3 stars emoji. Now, my beef with this, Sam, is I don't think you can have a special night in the Football League trophy group stage at the best of times, but when you're doing it in front of 1,648 people in a 30,000-seater stadium, to me, that does not a special night make. What about you?
Yeah, I know exactly where you're going with this. I kind of agree. I know the three goals were scored by youngsters. I don't know how many of them were debutants. That kind of comes into play, doesn't it? If this was like, you know, 7 or 8 upstarts getting their opportunity at the ground in front of the families, I think you still need probably...
Well, the family's made up half the crowd, so there's that.
There is that. I think you kind of need as well. I've watched the goals. There's a nice winner that goes flying in. Still, it needs to be a 2-0 behind turnaround, doesn't it, for it to be a special night? I think it was 2-2, and then they got the winner late on. So in terms of the ebb and flow of the game, I think it needs to be a miraculous recovery, really, to get the special night shout, even if we're talking about a few debutants as well. And the proximity to the opposition, possibly. Different divisions playing against a team in the higher division.
That's my train line sort of derby, really. Yeah, it's sort of.
That's what it's known as.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, rolls off the tongue that.
When I get the cheap train home from London, it'll go through MK Dons, then Northampton. So, you know, there's massive rivalry there. You're missing the big revelation here. Yeah, question marks over how special it is. But the big revelation for me is that Stadium MK has its own Twitter account. I mean, how many stadiums?
That's true, yeah.
How many stadiums have their own Twitter account? Yeah, very modern. I guess, you know, they've probably got a lot of things at Stadium MK that are not to do with the football, haven't they, in terms of events and whatnot. So
they've got a Marco Pierre White Steakhouse Bar and Grill and a double.
Well, it's TGI Fridays, haven't they, that I know Sam's quite a regular out back in the day.
Take that, a play in there later on this year. I'm not sure if this is just a bogus account though, because the header picture is of a full Stadium MK. So,
but I was there a couple of years ago, and I did think, I know everyone's got their opinions on MK Don, so I'm not going to go there. But you do park up and wander in there and think, this is some gaff, you know, like the restaurants and the suites and what have you, to be playing at the level that they are. It's mad, really.
Yeah. Well, none of those three goal scorers were debutants, and the winner came in the 83rd minute, which just doesn't quite qualify as being late enough for me. So I'm going to give that a 0 out of 10. Clarkie, tell people where they can follow us on social media.
Right, on X/Twitter, it's at EFL Whatthe. So yeah, we'll put out links, and yeah, if you can share them, that'd be absolutely fantastic. And on Instagram and TikTok, it's just at What the EFL. So if you want to see us in action, that's the place to head.
Sam, if I was to force you to guess, how many followers do you think the Stadium MK account has?
I had it up a minute ago.
Not followed by anyone I'm following, which is
the stadium. Well, that's that gives it away a little bit. So it's the stadium rather than the football club. Yeah, that's what we were just nattering about.
Yeah.
Oh, it's got to be 12,000.
Oh, it's generous. Clarkie, you looking at it now?
Yeah. I've got it. I know what it is. Yeah.
It's 2,237.
I've got double.
It's about the average gate, isn't it? Oh, can't say that.
Double the amount. Unlucky, Marco.
We are punching down at the end of this podcast. Before we go, let me remind you of the offer from Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers at sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. 18 plus. And remember, folks, always gamble responsibly. We should be back in our regular Monday slot next week, maybe minus a couple of MK Dons fans, but here nonetheless. Have a good weekend if you're going to a game. We'll catch up with you soon. Bye for now.